It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Film lovers, welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which you should check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
And if you go to it now, you can see the trailer of the film that is playing at IU Cinema tonight. And the person who helped get that onto the blog, that's Kobe Slagle in his Superman shirt.
Yep.
I am in my Blackula shirt. Happy Halloween, everyone. Then again, I wear this other than October 31st, yeah. So what's the big deal? So... And I saw that Fair Sweet Bianca is Snow White.
Yep.
So no apples for you guys?
Mm-mm.
No. Did you dress Frank up? Frank is their
No,
cat.
He has a cowboy costume, but he doesn't wear it. He doesn't like to wear it.
Like
you can't
child.
Get him in it. He has an Argyle Christmas sweater.
Yeah.
And he'll wear that. But
really?
He will not wear his cowboy costume.
Itchy.
Yeah.
Probably a little itchy, so all right, so a little bit later on in the show, speaking of Blackula at IU Cinema, that is happening tonight. I will have a chat with Joan Hawkins, who is the Associate Professor of Communication and Culture at IU, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But we have company in studio. We have Tricia and Charles Brovich, as well as Barnaby Aaron, who are the directors of the documentary Science, Sex, and the Ladies, which is premiering at the Irving Theater Thursday evening at 7:30 p.m. Doors open at 6:30. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, what's up?
Thanks
so
for having us.
I got to see 2/3 of this party at the Butler Chat on Wednesday. Big shout out to everybody who came to the movie music discussion. That was a lot of fun. And of course, next Friday is Hawaiian Shirt Day. And
start thinking about it.
Yeah, if you want to wear a Hawaiian shirt and jeans. No, next. Well, can be, I guess.
It would be nice.
Yeah, it would be
if
nice.
If you just want to do it.
Classy.
If you want to do it, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what? If Hawaiian shirts and jeans, not just for Fridays anymore. Like black, like Blackula shirts, not just for Halloween anymore.
All year round.
That's right. And thanks to Gina and Dan at Haunted Flower for the Blackula shirt, our old friends from the Film Critics Past. And the spouse chair, but next Friday at Clues Memorial Hall, you'll see Tarantino in concert, which is going to be the music from Quentin Tarantino films on stage, and you're just going to have to see it for yourself. But beforehand, at 7:15 in the little discussion room downstairs, I will be hosting a discussion about the music from Quentin Tarantino's films. So that is free with ticket purchase, so you can't just come down and see me, as lovely as that would be. So you can see me. I guess I'm the opening act, technically, for Tarantino on stage. That's not bad.
No.
Oh, yeah, that's
good.
That's
good for
like real
that.
Good.
So, okay. So, anyway, I got to see 2/3 of this party here the other night.
I'm the other third.
You are the other third.
Yeah.
You're the 33%.
It's my nickname, the other third.
The other third. We'll get shirts. This third, that third, other third.
Other third.
So, gang, they've made a documentary about the history of the orgasm.
Yes.
Whose idea was this?
Me.
A lady.
Yeah. It's the female. This is
the lady of the group.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
No, tell me. All right. So tell us how this documentary first started.
It started when I was in senior year of college back in 2002 and was taking a couple classes and thinking about some things and.
Thank you for saying things.
Yeah. Thinking about some things and started researching subjects related to this, and eventually it funneled into the idea that is the movie. Okay. So this has been going on a long time.
We've been talking about it as a film group for a long time. And when Trisha started researching it while we were still doing a bunch of shorts and all that back in the day, and she would bring us just
big, long
manuscripts of what she's written. We're like, well, this isn't a movie.
And then we slash it.
Right. So when did you guys start making this?
We went into production in 2009, the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we'd been writing it for...
Since probably 2004. Well, probably since 2006, we like really started working on creating that as a script.
So, correct me if I'm wrong. So it's about the history of how an orgasm is created. But your film also tackles the myths and stereotypes and the rights and wrongs about the big O.
Yes.
Yeah, because what it does is it takes it from a scientific point of view,
mm-hmm.
and then it discusses the cultural implications of that, and kind of like how all of that has affected like our history and.
Also known as no pressure, guys. So, I got to watch it, and this is not, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if you know this reference, then you know. Hey, I'm looking at you, but this is not the. We're gonna throw a little bit of education in on top of scenes of an extreme nature. These not those quote unquote educational films of the 70s that used to play in Times Square.
Right. Yeah.
There is imagery. There are words.
Yes.
There are words and pictures and imagery, but there's also a lot of education, a lot of knowledge that goes with it.
Yeah, I mean, every part that we used was very specifically to get the point across, and sometimes we had to use more.
And I think the reason we wanted to be very thorough on the information that was presented is we've seen so many. Documentaries about sex that are too vague, mm-hmm. too general. They're not cited. They kind of rely on people's preconceived notions. So we wanted to kind of challenge that and also make something that reflected the amount of research that Trisha had done on the subject and kind of make what we like to call it a visual essay more than
yes.
a documentary where...
Yeah.
We're just kind of taking Trisha's compilation of her research and our...
visualizing it.
Right, and visualizing it.
Just
a visual essay.
Trying to visualize it in a fun way because we know that, you know, it's... Well, why the subject is fun, it's also... the way we present it can be a little heady at times, but we wanted to make sure that it's accessible.
Yes. It's not... I remember saying to you, it's not... I don't think it's Mystery Science Theater fodder. I don't think it's, you know, the short films that they used to make us watch in class. Maybe not this particular subject, but those
right.
yeah. those style of the AV club, you know, the short films that Joel and Mike and the Bots would make fun of. It's not that. It winks at it. It pokes fun at it
yeah.
a little bit. You know, there are instructions at times, and there are people who show up. Don't you love the vagueness of the conversation?
There are people.
You kind of know what we're saying, but you know exactly what we're
actions
saying.
Actions and words.
It's, yeah, words
are
and
in the movie. We guarantee it.
Yes, and lots of Josh Ramsey.
There is a lot of Josh Ramsey
in this. No, folks, not that much. but I think it captures the tone of being informative. Being fun, addressing the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
And right. And also footnotes at the bottom of the screen, yeah. which tickles yeah. me. Was that idea from day one?
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's two ways to do a documentary that has some sort of that you can trust it. You can go interview the people who wrote the book and try to get them to say what you want them to say to make your point, or what we did was just say what what they said in their books and
their research
and use yeah and their research and then just cited it. So if you want to check our what we said, go check
it. It's like a research paper. It's cited in exactly the same way. We have our full bibliography. It's online. Yeah. Anyone can look up what we researched and we really wanted to put citations on there because we feel like this is a discussion that needs to start. We don't have all the answers. We're not stepping forward and saying, boom, this is the definitive.
This is not the cure.
Yeah, it's
or
definitely not
of
a
the cure.
But it's but this is the information that is
Robert Smith.
He's not
here.
He's not in this.
One visual and one person who's not in this.
Well,
group.
Not Correct. That Robert Smith. Another Robert Smith.
Bob Smith?
Yeah, Bobby Smith.
Yeah, why not?
He was great in the movie.
So it's a little bit about what's going to happen Thursday night with the premiere.
Well, a lot of people are going to show up, and
and they'll
this
see
is what usually happens at a premiere.
That's
right.
Right.
They'll see pictures and things and people.
A guy from Hollywood will come by with a big check.
Big
and
check,
say,
yeah.
And Mr. Guffman's going to be there.
That's
it's
right.
Gonna be
That's right. And no, we're going to have doors open at 6:30. We're going to have Scarlet
Lane
Brewery, which is a new brewery out in
McCordsville,
our neck of the woods. Actually, their brewery is right behind Trish's
mom's
store.
The McCordsville Mercantile. I'm going to plug that, too.
Yeah.
Your mom's store?
Yeah. My mom and my aunt.
Hey, mom. I'm just going to grab some stuff. I'll be there. Yeah, good seeing you, too. Yeah.
But that's like our neck of the woods. But they're going to be they'll have beer for sale there, and we'll just be in hanging out until the movie starts at 7:30. And
Q&A afterwards?
I don't know.
Not
Maybe
sure.
Not.
Sometimes Q&As can get a little.
If you have a question, you can come and talk
subject?
To me.
No.
It is a school night.
I think you should.
A lot of times at a Q&A, people can be like, they want to make a point instead of ask a question.
Where's Josh live?
Yeah, right.
I'm not
right.
We can tell you.
Yeah,
you need to know.
Don't put
Q&A.
That in
here.
So, yeah.
We'll do something where
we'll answer
available and around and maybe do a little questioniness at the end. If people need to get home to go to bed, questioniness.
That's right.
If they ask us, how dare you, we won't answer that question.
Oh, you definitely should.
Because.
How could we not?
That's the answer.
Yeah. Or why not?
Or just answer it and just say it right back. How dare you?
How dare you?
Your turn.
Thank you for coming out.
That'll show them. Great comebacks.
But it's over in Irvington, and you can go to Giacomo's or Black Acre or any
Giacomo's.
Other place around there.
Yeah.
She's Louise.
She's Louise is great.
So good.
She's going to be there as well. She's Louise.
She's Louise.
So if folks want to find out more about the film and prep up, where should they go?
ScienceSexAndTheLadies.com.
You got that one. It's not Science, Sex, and the Ladies 2.
No, ScienceSexAndTheLadies.com.
They were the first ones to get that
That's
one. That's very
lucky
good.
For us.
So, you know what? Let's take a short break.
Okay.
And then when we come back after the break, we'll have my chat with Joan Hawkins, who is the Associate Professor of Communication and Culture at IU. And, of course, tonight on campus at Kobe's alma mater is Blackula. So we'll be talking about that, as well as a couple of her classes that she teaches, as well as blaxploitation horror and horror films in general. And then we'll talk about what's new in theaters, because I have guests that saw something that opened today. It's very cool. And we have Blackula music. But that's every Friday. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show, here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
This is Sammy Terry being terrorized with you, with film sociology. Have many pleasant nightmares.
Our guy, our ghoul.
I love Sammy Terry.
Yes,
I love Sammy Terry.
Well, as well you should. And he is, of course, he was on the show last week, and he is on tonight on Channel 4, TTV 4. Did you set your DVR?
No, don't have a DVR anymore.
You don't?
Thanks for nothing, Comcast.
Ooh,
wow. Comcast. Okay, do you have the Betamax lined up and ready to go? Can Frank push record with his paw? I can press record. Anyway, sorry, Kobe. Let's all get a Kickstarter fund so Kobe can have goal. Anyway, tonight at 10 o'clock on TTV4, you get not one but two films that Sammy Terry is going to introduce. The 1979 original, which I saw in theaters, and the remake, which I didn't, of The Amityville Horror. Oh. So the original with James Brolin and Margot Kidder and everyone's favorite quiet priest, Rod Steiger. And those are some intense masses, I'm telling you. And in the remake with not your guy, Ryan Reynolds,
yep.
And Philip Baker Hall, who's slightly less loud than Father Rod Steiger. So, hey, Kobe, he might not, you know, Ryan might not survive this film.
Oh, no.
Maybe. There's a possibility.
Well, he made
Isn't
it
Isn't he the James Brolin in it, though?
Yes, he is.
So. Oh, I don't know. Maybe
I was
not.
I was trying to give Kobe some hope.
Because
he has a list of people he's not crazy about, and Mr. Reynolds is near the top of that list. So. Yeah. So anyway, Sammy Terry's going to be on tonight. And if you listen to MeTV this evening, they are, Svengoolie is hosting segments in between the programs. All the shows on MeTV, all the TV shows from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, have some scary or Halloween theme to them. So that's happening tonight.
Halloween things are going to happen on TV.
Halloween things are going to happen
on
MeTV.
Should.
And of course, Svengoolie's on MeTV tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. Sorry, Kobe. however, tonight at IU Cinema, they are showing the 1972 blaxploitation horror masterpiece compared to the others. compared to Blackenstein, Mr. Black, Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde, and Abby. And J.D.'s Revenge, yeah, it's a masterpiece by comparison.
Okay.
But they're showing Blackula, and starring the late, great William Marshall. And I got to speak with Joan Hawkins, the Associate Professor of Communication and Culture down at IU, about tonight's screening. They've had an African-American film series about the blaxploitation horror films of the 70s. We talked about horror films in general, and we talked about how cruddy the weather is. And instead of trick-or-treating, you should go see Blackula at IU. Here's the chat.
They're predicting, you know, snow flurries here, so I'm hoping that people come out for Blackula tonight because it's a great movie.
Absolutely. Now, before we talk about the movie, what classes are you currently teaching, and when can film sociology make a road trip and watch?
I'm currently teaching a class called Nightmare Movies. That's Tuesdays and Thursdays from 2:30 to 3:45 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And we usually have our screenings on Tuesday night at 7:15 to 10:15.
Well, if you see old guys in the back row, it's probably us.
Okay.
and for the record, I am wearing my Blackula shirt. For this interview.
Good.
So,
good.
Now, I know this has been a part of an African-American horror series. I know there was Ganja and Hess as well as J.D.'s Revenge. How have the attendance been for those?
They've been very good. Ganja and Hess really had a wonderful reception. The film hasn't gotten as much coverage as one would hope it would have. So a lot of even, you know, diehard horror fans hadn't seen the full version. They'd only seen chopped up bits and pieces of it. So we had a really good turnout for that first night.
Is that even on, is that on DVD officially?
You know, I don't know. I know that it came out on a very poor video a few years ago. I'm going to just check now to see if it's out on DVD.
Because that's always one that I've always heard about, have not seen, and, you know, going on Amazon, that's that, you know, the prices are too big. But yeah, I don't think there's been an official one on that.
Yeah, it's been, and it's just, it's such a beautiful, I mean, just visually it's a beautiful film, but then it is just so interesting, and the way that it interacts with the black church is really fascinating.
And I know J.D.'s Revenge, I believe, is the film Glenn Turman did after Cooley High, and that's one of the better horror films of the so-called blaxploitation genre.
Yeah, it's true. So,
For me, the top is Blackula. I think that one's the best by far.
No, it's a great movie.
Well, and I keep telling people, one is the two things it has going for it is one, the treatment of the lead as a tragic figure.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's really ever been covered. They do it a little bit in Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula as far as love loss and a sad figure. And the other is the performance by William Marshall, who I think is incredible in this film.
I know. He's wonderful in this film. And, I mean, just the voice alone is enough to send shivers down your spine.
Well,
amazing.
You know, I keep telling people this was a classically trained New York stage actor, and he just wipes the floor with anybody who crosses his path.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's really true.
How was it getting this series organized, and how many of the people involved had seen these films?
I don't know if one of the people who was very involved in helping to organize it was Terry Francis, who's a recent hire, and then she was working with the Black Film Center Archive, and so which is one of the best and biggest black film archives, I think, in the entire nation, certainly within the state of Indiana. And it and so they had the promotional materials there. And it was she and Michael Martin and Brian Ganey who were doing the yeoman's work, and then they got the IU Cinema involved. And I know, like, I had seen Gontcha and Hess, and I had seen Blackula, but I had not seen J.D.'s Revenge before we showed it, which was, so that was a nice thing for me. I think that Michael Martin had seen all three of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know, and I know the last two were, MGM had put out a Soul Cinema collection, so those mm-hmm. were fairly, you know, I don't think they're in print now, but they're still, I mean, you could go to shops and find them, but there was a period where they were readily available.
Right.
Going back a little bit, I mean, obviously what we call the so-called blaxploitation, I say so-called because Fred Williamson always said, my check's never cleared, or my check's always cleared, who's getting exploited?
Yeah.
But it proved that there was a market for making films towards that audience. And I know once the success of Shaft and Superfly, they started making genre films of all kinds geared toward the African-American audience.
Right.
Do you remember how far it was when the horror film started to pop up?
Well, Blackula was one of the first ones, I think. And one of the things about Blackula is that they went to a lot of trouble to ensure that there would be an audience for the film. And so, I mean, one of the things about Blackula is that there is there's this kind of the film begins with a nod toward the history of slavery. So the idea is that Blackula and his bride, his black queen, come to see Dracula, hoping that they can engage Dracula in donating money into helping them wipe out the slave trade, only to find out that they've been cruelly tricked. And so, you know, Dracula imprisons Blackula and takes his bride and then locks him up for a while, and then he's sort of resuscitated. But when they did the original promotion for Blackula, one of the things that they did to ensure that there would be a large audience for it was to mention slavery prominently on the poster, and to let people know that this was going to be a blaxploitation film in the model of blaxploitation films, but it also was going to have this kind of more serious tie-in.
So, yeah, a little hidden, I mean, not hidden, but a message right off the bat.
Right, exactly.
And then I think once, you know, even when we get to the stereotypically gay antique dealers in modern-day Los Angeles and the pimps and the go-go, I mean, and it's, you know, the thing about the blaxploitation films was on one side, it got a lot of actors and actresses a lot of work. And on the other side, they weren't always the best drawn characters.
This is true.
and that's why I think, even though those stock characters are there, but it's balanced by the fact that William Marshall treats the material like it's King Lear.
Right. And also the woman who plays his bride is quite wonderful, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was a role that wasn't a prostitute, wasn't a damsel in distress.
Exactly.
I mean, wasn't really the quote unquote damsel in distress. She had a little bit to work with.
Right. No, she had actually quite a bit to work with, and the fact that once she in sort of a typical vampire movie fashion, when she realizes that this Blackula figure is in love with her because he thinks that she reminds him of this woman that he lost, and he thinks that she might actually be this, former African princess. That's always that's very wonderful to think that you were a princess in a former life, or that this guy thinks you're a princess. It's great.
Exactly. And so it also has the some of the stuff you expect from a vampire film, like the transformation from man to bat, as well as you can for a low budget 1972 film. And of course the attacks. I think there's even the great shot of, you could tell somebody is sitting either in a wheelchair or on a gurney.
Right.
As they're flying, stalking after somebody. Do you need some water?
Yeah, I think I've got some here, actually. Thank you.
Well, take a drink. It's okay.
Okay.
You're listening to Film Sociology here on WFYI. I'm here with Joan Hawkins, the Associate Professor of Communication and Culture at Indiana University. Tonight, if you're heading down south, and you really should, because it's too cold to trick-or-treat, but you can, take the kids to go see Blackula. I showed it to my daughter, and she's fine. So go check that out. Now, this also spawned Scream Blackula Scream, I think about a year later, Pam Grier, and also it tackles in the art of voodoo, which has not always had the best representation in pop culture.
Yes. Yeah, no, although it's interesting because there's a whole long line of voodoo films that also treat, issues of Black cultural politics. So even going back to something like I Walked with a Zombie, or there was another one that was very, old film, but that was dealing with issues of slavery, that was dealing with issues of the way that that Western religion and civilization was sort of foisted upon Black cultures, and Black cultures were lost in the process. Horror has always been a very interesting kind of an umbrella genre through which or under which people could look at very, very serious and very provocative themes. And precisely because it is a genre, because these are genre films, and because the genre is considered to be fantastic, you can end up tackling things that have a lot of social sensitivity in ways that you can't in just a straight movie. And the voodoo films and horror are no exception. White Zombie is another one where you've got, actually it's a zombie film, but where you've got these zombied characters who are made zombies via voodoo cults, and then they're forced to work in the sugar plantations.
Have you seen Sugar Hill?
Yeah.
That's the first thing I thought of, was it was a revenge film. It just happens to have zombies involved in it.
Right.
So. Right. Now, have you seen most of the quote unquote black horror films of that era? Because I'm patting myself on the back. I own a lot of these in my collection, whether it's Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde, Blackenstein, Abby, which was the other William Marshall film that he appeared in. I think those kind of dip down as far as quality and craftsmanship. But was there still messages coming from those films as well?
Yeah, I think that you're hard pressed to find a horror film that isn't just made for humor. I think that you're hard pressed to find one that doesn't have some little bits in there. And the fact that these films were all being made in the 1970s, when civil rights was still very much an issue, when people were trying to figure out what the kind of post-immediate moment of civil rights was going to look like. We'd had, Night of the Living Dead in 68, in which you had that amazing performance.
Yes.
Of a black man who survives the zombie threat only to be killed by these white vigilantes in the morning. I mean, horror has, I think all these horror films have really made kind of interesting contributions to the dialogue about race in the country.
So what films have you talked about in your class?
Well, so in my class, I'm having them go see Blackula tonight.
Good.
And they went and saw Ganja and Hess when we showed it before. But we've been, one of the things that my class is doing is taking a look at the relationship between films that are clearly horror films or get positioned as horror films and films that don't necessarily get positioned as horror films. So we watched The Premature Burial, for example, and then we watched the Dutch film The Vanishing, which was, you know, marketed as an art film, but which deals with this woman who's kidnapped and then buried alive.
That just got reissued on Blu-ray this week by Criterion.
Yes, and it's just, and I would encourage people to take a look at it because it's just a phenomenally well-made film. It's too bad he remade the film later,
which I saw in college. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It wasn't nearly as powerful or as strong, and I'm not quite sure what made him decide he needed to do that, but. But the first Vanishing is just, it's a really amazing film, and it's this amazing film about obsession, because the woman who's abducted, her boyfriend, just, he can't go on with his life until he knows what happens to her. And there's this one very chilling moment in the film where he even says that between getting her back, or, you know, being able to forget her and move on with his life and have a happy life, or finding out what happened to her, he would choose finding out what happened to her. And so at the end he does in a very kind of gruesome way. So we've seen, and we're just finishing up now, a kind of a slasher cycle where we saw Nightmare on Elm Street this past week. We watched Candyman, which is another film about race politics, which is very interesting. And we watched American Psycho, which is one of those films that sits on the border between, you know, an art film and horror films.
When you mentioned that, I just saw Nightcrawler today, and that's kind of horrifying in its own way. And another one that I guess that you could probably throw in that is Taxi Driver.
Yes, absolutely. Taxi Driver really is. I mean, that scene when you first see the taxi driving along and all the steam is coming up from the gratings in New York City is just very, very, very frightening.
Yeah, I think folks got to know sometimes you have a better chance at seeing a psychotic taxi driver than you do a slasher in a mask.
I know, I think so. I've been in a cab with a couple of psychotic taxi drivers.
I guess what were some of the horror films you enjoyed watching as a kid?
Well, I was funny because I was just having breakfast with somebody today. I remember this was way back in the day. When I was like 9, I remember just watching TV and stumbling across James Whale's Frankenstein. And that was, I think, the first film that I saw that I recognized as clearly being a horror film. And I was just, I was just transported. I just loved it immediately. And then as I got a little older, I had a very special fondness for the Val Lewton films. So Cat People, I Walked with a Zombie, The Curse of the Demon, all of those films that I thought were just wonderful. I loved Psycho. I loved some of the really kind of weird 1950s films like Carnival of Souls. I remember I saw that when I was in college and was just blown away. There are very few that I've seen that I absolutely haven't liked. I like The Uninvited, that Ray Milland film.
I have that on Blu-ray.
In fact, another great film.
There's a horror show host on MeTV, and it's called Svengoolie, based out of Chicago, and he showed The Uninvited a couple weeks ago.
Oh yeah, no, it's such a good film, and it's not shown as much as it ought to be.
No, it's a mature haunted house story.
Yeah. Yeah, and I heard today from somebody that it was actually like the first studio-made haunted house film or studio-made ghost film that didn't have like a major comedy component to it, that it was one of the first ones that was made that was actually made just straight.
Well, it's funny you mentioned it because especially if you're doing, since we started with talking about African-American horror films, there was usually the stereotypical Rochester character who would, you know, eyes would bug out and he'd go through the wall and the shape of the body as he ran through the wall. Yeah, exactly. This was a serious, mature haunted house story.
Yeah, I know, is great. And there's also The Haunting of Hill House. That's another one that's just wonderful, wonderful film.
And I know, I think they just reissued like half a dozen Vincent Price films on Blu-ray.
Yeah, oh gosh, yes, they're all coming out now, and they're beautiful things. They're just gorgeous films.
If you don't mind me asking, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Did you have a local horror show host as a kid?
Yes, we had Bob Wilkins with Creature Features.
Okay, cool. I grew up in Michigan where we had Sir Graves Ghastly out of Detroit, and then, of course, Sammy Terry down here and Svengoolie in Chicago. So what day or night was the show on?
So Creature Features was on Friday, and as it got going, it was on Friday and Saturday night.
Oh, lucky you.
And we would have, and it was great. I mean, they would do these, they would do double features. And it was one of the first places where I got this notion that has been captivating me forevermore about kind of paracinema. So the way that these kinds of B-horror films would get paired in production catalogs and collector catalogs with things like The Checker's Speech and Marijuana,
right,
and Reefer Madness and those things, because they would show all that stuff on Creature Features. It was you never knew what you were going to get. I mean, you knew what the two main films were supposed to be, but then besides that, it was anybody, whatever he had that he wanted to show. It was great.
Yeah, that's kind of sort of a lost art. And now those films, you mentioned those titles, and those are usually the ones that nobody knows who has the rights for it, so they just slap it on a DVD and sell it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So, so it sounds like from your class, you're not showing the dumb dead teenager movies. Nobody's half dressed while checking for noises down the hallway.
No. No. Although,
or they stop and they realize they have to get undressed in order to find out what the noise is.
There was a lot of laughter during certain scenes in Nightmare on Elm Street, but no, we haven't had any half-dressed people walking down the hallway.
Okay, that's fine. Well, it is an institution of learning, so you got to what not to do. So, Joan, thank you so much. Happy Halloween, and enjoy Blackula.
Oh, well, thank you, and happy Halloween to you.
That was Joan Hawkins, Associate Professor of Communication and Culture at Indiana University. And tonight, Blackula is being screened at IU Cinema. Kobe, what else is happening at your alma mater? You said busy weekend.
Yes,
it's Halloween.
It is a full weekend. Coming up here in a little under an hour, actually. We have
Road trip.
Yep.
Quick.
You got enough time to get down there. From 1971, Malpertuis.
Gesundheit.
Huh. You have
bum.
Blackula, of course, at 9:30 tonight. Midnight Movies, IU Cinema. The Strange Color of Your Body's Tears.
I love that title.
I do too. I want to see
it. Is that a chapter in your documentary?
It is.
It is. It's a very interesting chapter.
The horror thriller from this year.
Thank
tomorrow.
You. Thank you for two syllables on that, because that's a different film festival if it's one.
Saturday, November 1st, 3:00, IU Cinema. From 1935, Mad Love.
Oh, Peter Lorre.
Yep, there you go.
Excellent.
Follow that up. Actually, looks like you have a couple options here at 3 o'clock. Mad Love or The Raven.
Vincent Price and Peter Lorre. Or as Sammy Terry called him, Vinny Price.
He knows him personally, you know.
Well, and there is, actually, if you go to my Facebook page, and I'm also on Twitter at Matthew Sosie, but there, when I guess it was declared Sammy Terry Day back in like 1982, so there was an anniversary special, and it started with a clip of Vincent Price coming out of the coffin and wishing Sammy Terry a happy anniversary. So I guess he can call him Vinny.
That's high praise.
But that's kind of you.
If he's been in your coffin, you can call him.
Yeah.
I guess, but my buddy Laura and I always talk about the celebrities that we wish we were that casual, like Greg Peck. Bob De Niro. Like nobody does that.
Bobby.
Yeah.
Marty Scorsese.
Exactly. So that doesn't. But I had never heard Vinny Price. I think that's all kinds of cool. What else is happening at IU?
Tomorrow, 6:30 from 2013. Her.
Best film of last year.
Love
that one.
I loved All Is Lost. That was my number one for a while, and then I saw Her. So great.
Yeah.
Well-deserved best screenplay nomination. Should have been up for, did it? Was it up for Best Picture?
Yeah.
I think it was.
I think so, yeah.
What?
I think.
Should have.
What did win?
12 Years a Slave.
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
That
worked out.
They were good movies last year.
It's too bad they were both at the same time.
That's right.
Yeah.
What else you got there?
9:30, Strange Color of Your Body's Tears again. Then Sunday at 3 o'clock.
Still tearing.
I kind of want to see that.
Strange.
Sunday, November 2nd, 3 o'clock, Utamaro and His Five Women from 1946. You know it?
No.
No. Okay. And then in the Polish Interiors series at IU Cinema Sunday.
Not the Polish version of the Woody Allen film Interiors.
Tomorrow Will Be Better from 2011. And then Monday, get this, Monday Matinee Classics from 1950 through 1952 at 3 o'clock, IU Cinema Singing in the Rain.
Whoa. Nice. Are you gonna play hooky? You and Bianca are going to play hooky now that we've said it on the air.
That's a cool matinee.
That is a cool matinee. That's a really good matinee. And be a clown.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real number. No disrespect to Gene Kelly, but that's the real number.
So. And then Midnight Movies this weekend at Keystone Landmark from 1958, The Fly.
Would you see The Fly?
I don't know.
The original
Too
Fly.
Spooky? Yeah.
Well, Mr. Slagle, and I promise this is not going to be Let's Beat Up on Kobe week like it is every week. Scary and freaky films.
Oh, so we're taking a break.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So anyway, scary and freaky films are not high up on Mr. Slagle's account. Listing. So anyway, that's why I asked. I mean, The Fly, I think you would... It's more science gone wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm reading the little synopsis here on the Landmark website.
Yeah, it's got Vinny Price in it.
Yeah, Vinny.
It does.
Oh, Vince. I call him Vince.
Vince. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Price.
So I would say you have a better shot at watching that than apparently the 10-year anniversary reissue of Saw.
Oh yeah. Yep. Oh, actually, I have seen that.
You saw Saw?
I saw Saw.
Why'd you see Saw?
Yeah. Why?
Why?
I don't know why I see Saw.
Yeah, who dragged you to that? It was before you met me. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, I don't.
Is that part of shaping why you don't like scary movies?
Yeah.
I suspect it maybe.
See, it's like Sammy Terry, Spanguli films, and Blackula. That's okay. But yeah, I think we kind of know where the line is drawn, and we don't need to go there because this is film sociology, not Kobe group therapy. So yes, The Fly is happening, and that's great because I know this year they showed Landmark Keystone, they showed The Exorcist, they showed Alien, they showed The Shining, A Clockwork Orange, mm-hmm. And so yeah, I think that's a really good choice. I like seeing the older movies on the big screen whenever possible.
Yes,
you folks have seen The Fly?
I haven't seen the original Fly.
I have not either.
I've only seen the remake. So
the David Cronenberg version with Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis.
Yes, absolutely.
I saw that in the theaters because I'm that old by comparison to this room.
I think about it every time I look in my closet. I'm like, because he has that scene where he opens
all
and he has the
same jacket.
Like, that's you a have good a, idea. That's but a I just can't pull it off.
That's a lot of Blackula shirts, though.
But it's worth it.
I'm sure Haunted Flower would be excited about
that.
Oh, yeah. Just have a whole closet.
They'd see that. Gina would see that order come in. Oh, cool. And then she'd see where she's shipping it to. Oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, that's no shock here. So we're here hanging out with Tricia, Charles, and Barnaby from Science, Sex, and Ladies, which is having their premiere at the Irving on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of fun. Don't bring props.
It is not a horror movie either.
What?
It's not a horror movie either.
Right.
Or single syllable of that genre.
Correct.
So we're going to talk about what's new in theaters now that apparently there's some horror movie with Daniel Radcliffe opening today called Horns.
That
trailer looked
awesome. I liked
that
trailer.
So, Kobe, you're not going.
Horns.
Does he have horns?
He
grows them.
There's a line
I
in
think
there.
I saw a poster for this or like a cardboard cutout or something or other.
Tusk. Well, yeah. Horns. Yeah. Tusk.
They're just trying it out. They're spitballing it.
Well, and to be fair, because I was watching a film earlier and saw that. Oh, no. One of the trailers at the film today was the sequel. Did we need a sequel to The Woman in Black?
Oh, yeah.
Still blacking, still winning.
Still in black.
Don't need that.
Don't need that. I saw the first one, which I actually liked.
I did too. Not like it.
But you saw it.
Yes.
Is it called Black is the New Black?
No, that's a different prison. but anyway, so I guess he's doing that. That's fine. But you're not seeing that.
That's nope. Fine.
No, that's okay. Also opening is Before I Go to Sleep with Nicole Kidman, Colin Firth, and Mark Strong. Okay. Which looks more suspenseful than Scary Cobe.
Wait, what are you talking about? What did you say? I'm sorry.
Are you Google imaging vintage
He's doing
shit?
Things.
No, I'm looking at stuff that's coming next week.
To prepare?
Yeah.
Okay. Then we have the art house film The Blue Room, which that's next door to the Oasis. And that's okay. But also opening today. Now, Kobe, I have a couple of films that you might want to check out because they are not of the horror.
I was looking for the Daniel Radcliffe thing.
Oh, they're not of the horror or freaky genre, but it's disturbing and it's, I think, in a more realistic way. And that's the film Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal. Where he's the guy who films blood and carnage on the streets of Los Angeles for the TV news.
Oh, that's what that is?
That's what that is.
Yeah.
So and
not the X-Man.
No, not that.
No, not that. Yeah, not that Nightcrawler.
And it's not the Public Eye either. but I know Trish and Charles, you saw this as well. It's written and directed by Dan Gilroy, who gave us Duplicity as well as Michael Clayton.
Okay.
You see the connection.
I can
a little bit.
Actually, yeah.
And it does have the look of like a Michael Mann film. A lot of dark nighttime in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
A lot of digital handheld work. But Gyllenhaal plays a sociopath who winds up getting a job filming accident on the spot news. A lot of times, even before the police show up, and he sells them to a news producer played by Renee Russo. Always good to see her. And as his success grows, so do his. He was a sociopath to begin with from the beginning of the film, but interfering and creating and
it's kind of the darkest version of that type of profession that you could imagine, you know.
Yes,
I think that in network, but yeah, it does start to go down a really squirm-inducing path as far as who's creating the news and why do we have this and who's watching this and we're all guilty of it and
even what like, you know, who's creating the news but who is in charge of, you know, distilling the news is I think a big part of it.
Agreed. Your thoughts? Great start. How much time we got, Cobb?
It was a little heavy-handed, I thought.
A little bit.
I enjoyed it. And I always love seeing Jake Gyllenhaal.
Is that his celebrity
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
I don't know why we started calling him Jake Gyllenhaal.
I don't know why we did either.
Do you do that to Maggie, though?
No,
that's fine. Okay.
Yeah. She's not Maggie Gyllenhaal.
He's really good in this.
He is really good. I thought he was really good.
His performance is
it is. I keep waiting for him to blink.
Yeah.
There is that kind of wide-eyed, intense.
It's a lot of wide-eyed close-ups, I feel like.
The movie was very close-up.
Well, and I think that gives to the voyeuristic nature of the story, of the story of itself, but also, we're following him as he's. That's a life. As I was talking with Joan Hawkins, I got little bitty flashbacks of Taxi Driver. Not saying it's not nearly as close, but you know, this guy and what products he can create can be far more terrifying than somebody with a slasher mask running around Haddonfield, Illinois. Hi, Jamie Lee. The way that. You know, this is a more realistic horror picture, I guess, without the blood and the gut. Well, there is blood.
There is blood.
But it's pixelated
gut,
at times. And it's argued on what is news and what isn't. It's a cynical film. It is heavy-handed at times, but it's also very effective, and it's got a really solid performance from Gyllenhaal.
Absolutely.
Oh, for sure.
So, Cobb, do we have?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hang on.
What do we have?
We have a reaction. We don't do ratings here because I want you to hear the review, but we have audio clips that go.
It's also an art film.
Close.
You bite your tongue.
Yeah. Compared to Horns, I bet it is. So that's really okay. So anyway, Cope, it is disturbing. Maybe I guess a little creepy, but not freaky, and it's not a horror film.
He's really nice to his plants.
He is nice to his plants.
Those were maybe some of my favorite shots.
There's a shot where he keeps filling up, keeps watering his plant. It's really special.
It is. Takes care of him.
Yeah, but that helps balance out the scene where a piece of heavy hadness is when he grabs this mirror and it breaks and it
streams into
the mirror breaks with the image of him in it.
Yeah.
Get it?
It's very metaphor.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Heavy metaphor.
I got it.
I don't get it.
I'm still digesting
Wonder
it.
God. Okay. So anyway, those are out in theaters as well. So should we go to the video store? Do we have time to go to the video store?
Yeah, we got time to go to the video store.
Do we have the intro for the video store?
Yeah, as I was laughing about, he said go Stevie Wonder got it.
Get it? Because he's blind.
Get it? Because yeah, and
Ray Charles got it, and he's dead. He's blind, right. and dead. Can you be blind and dead?
I think so.
You are both.
Dead person is blind, right?
Hey, you guys want to go to the video store?
Yeah, let's go play that.
Are either one of these any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
Hey, big week for Tyler Hansborough.
Oh, yeah. Season's open. Season is on.
How are Raptors basketball doing? Have
Los
they played
Raptors,
again?
I don't know. They have to have played by now.
And
I'll check on that.
By the way, for those, Film Sociology is your home for Ben and Tyler Hansborough news. Okay. We are fans of white basketball. maybe Ben. And, of course, Ben's not on the practice squad for the Bulls. I think he was dropped.
Yeah, he was.
Sadly
he was
dropped. Released. So maybe he'll get to another squad or play in a foreign country. You've got to have that.
It's an option.
If you get a chance, go to YouTube and type in Tyler Hansborough reads Chicken Little.
I will do that.
It's amazing.
That sounds riveting.
It's great.
That will happen.
Sorry. You know, he should do it on stage at the Irving.
Okay. We'll just show that.
We're talking about
the
Tyler
movie.
Hansborough performance art now.
Yeah, I think Tyler reading that. The classics like The Great Gatsby or Ulysses. I think he'd be good at reading James Joyce.
Maybe he's a surprise guest. You never know.
Exactly. I think
come
maybe
on down.
Tyler is old enough. He could still maybe pull off his portrayal of Hamlet. I think that would be good. You know, and then once he retires, he can play Richard III. Fun stuff. All right. So. There's of course a movie of the month club called Film Movement, and Cobe, this is another film. It sounds like a horror film, and it has elements of it, but nothing of a squeamish nature. So stick with me on this.
Okay.
It's from Spain, and it's called Cannibal: A Love Story. See,
you had me at Cannibal. See, Love Story.
That's better than Hello. Really,
it is.
But it's a gentleman who is. A tailor.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, see where that. Again, Stevie Wonder saw that. Okay. Not James Taylor, because that will lull you to sleep. But but he selects his female victims, and then he bleeds them, and then he eats them. Oh. But there is hardly.
So it's not a horror story?
No, well, I will say there. I will say there is, for a film of this subject matter, there is very little blood and gore in
okay,
it. In fact, right. None. There are some blood shots.
Does he like stitch them back together because he's a tailor? Because that would be my
guess.
That's
what I kept thinking.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he does freeze pack them and put them in his freezer. And
oh
he
well.
Has,
then.
Oh, it's very clean.
It's
yeah.
very clean.
Very clean.
Right. So it's an art house. Clean cannibal tailor.
Yeah, there you go.
And this is what happens as the story goes on. And so it's very meticulous. It's kind of seeing who he's going to go after next. And then what happens when you're a cannibal tailor and you start to have feelings for a female that you just met?
That's a tough situation.
See? That's a good question.
And there lies the rub, not the spice rub.
Unless
you're into that sort of thing. So
maybe that's the answer.
Right.
Maybe that could be the answer. So anyway, it is of a horror subject matter, but it is not treated like a dumb horror film.
Right.
Okay. Is it a real quiet film?
It is a quiet film. It was a very quiet film.
I like a quiet film.
So, Kobe, there you go. You have titles to ponder.
Excellent.
Not Christian Ponder.
Yeah, no.
You don't want to do that. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week is a film I know Kobe and I have seen, not together, but it's from the director of Once, John Carney, called Begin Again.
Yes.
With Keira Knightley and Mark Ruffalo. He plays an A&R man who just had the Jerry Maguire worst day of his life. and loses his job, and he meets at a jam session an acoustic singer-songwriter played by Keira Knightley. And it's reminded me of Hugo, because I remember saying that Hugo was a well-shot, wonderfully made infomercial about film restoration.
That's, yeah.
The Begin Again is a beautifully shot, well-acted, well-made infomercial about independent music.
Yep.
And the two of them get together, and they decide to record an album on the streets of New York.
Yep.
Noise and warts and all.
Yep.
And so it is the
wild.
It is the power of music. And there are moments with the Ruffalo character. His daughter is played by Hailee Steinfeld. Guess what? Dad and daughter don't always get along. And the ex-wife,
that is surprising.
Ex-wife played by Catherine Keener. They're divorced, so they really don't get along.
Yeah,
wow. Yeah, but they do.
They do.
Kind
well, it is a little more than that. You're right. It is a little more of that. And also the sticky relationship with Keira Knightley's ex, played actually really well by Adam Levine.
Yeah.
Who's not quite the over-the-top D-bag rock star, although he becomes that. but good casting on his part. But also the relationship between Knightley and Ruffalo. Fortunately, I don't think I'm going to give away too much, but it does maintain a platonic, almost Star Is Born feel. Hmm. But yeah, the 12-year-old was watching this, and anytime it looked like they were going to get intimate, I could hear Emma go, no, 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 no.
It's awkward.
Because that would ruin it for her. So that is out on that's out on DVD.
Now that was
Blu-ray.
A good
That's worth
movie.
Checking out. And then, Kobe, you will appreciate this. The film Life of Crime, which is based on a novel by one of our favorite film sociology guests, author Elmore Leonard. May he rest in peace.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
And some will say this is a prequel because it features two young characters, a young Ordell and a young Lewis from Jackie Brown.
Ooh.
Only instead of Robert De Niro and Sam Jackson, it's played by Yassine Bey. That's what Mos Def is going by these days.
That's his real name?
Oh, Mos Def.
I guess. And John Hawks. For you fans of
yes.
Deadwood and Winter's Bone.
Okay.
It's fine in both of those. But yeah. Anyway, they play the young versions of Ordell and Lewis, and they kidnap a trophy wife played by Jennifer Aniston. Way to go, guys. Married to a philandering businessman Tim Robbins, who's having an affair with Isla Fisher. Way to go, Tim. But it's one of those situations of what happens when your wife is kidnapped and you don't want her back.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's
one of those situations.
And by the way, this novel is called
Don't you hate when you're in one of those situations?
I hate that.
We all do.
Yeah, my wife's laughing her head off now. but this is a film. This was a novel that came out in the late 70s called The Switch, and there was a similar plot used in the 80s comedy Ruthless People with Danny DeVito and Bette Midler. So this came first. Anyway, it's Leonard was an executive producer on it. It captures the characters and the dialogue. That's all I really want from an Elmore Leonard film. So that is out on video. Deliver Us from Evil, which I know, Kobe, you're not going to see. And Criterion has put out the original, not the American remake, of The Vanishing.
Ooh.
So the Dutch horror film from the thriller from the late 80s. So, Kobe, do we have words to live by?
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
So, Trisha and Charles Bravich and Barnaby Aaron, thank you for coming out. Have fun Thursday night at the Irving.
Thank you.
Doors open at 6:30, screenings at 7:30, Q&A immediately after. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Happy Halloween.
We go. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.